So let's hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, which are very means of conquest. Narayanam namaskritya.
Narayanam namaskritya.
Naram chaiva narottamam.
Devim sarasatim vyasam.
Tato jaya mudiraye. It's our very means of conquest. This is what tato jaya mudiraye. By having association with the Srimad Bhagavatam, we can conquer over what? Hare Krishna. What do we conquer over by being in association with Krishna through the Srimad Bhagavatam? Our very means of conquest.
False ego.
Death. Material desires. That are always being plagued by these things. This is conditional life. But by association with Bhagavatam, we can conquer this. And which verse are we on today, Karnath Prabhu? Which is it? 110? 110, 15, and 16. Okay. Which page is it in your book?
21.
Page 21. Bharadanga Shanka Peryascha Veena Palava Gomukaha Tunturyanaka Gantadya Nedur Dunda Bayastata Mridanga Shanka Peryascha Veena Panava Gomukaha Tunturyanaka Kantadya Nedur Dundabayastata. Have you chanters?
Mridanga
Shanka Peryascha Veena Panava Gomukaha Dundhuryanaka Gandhadya Nedur Dundapayastata Mridanga Shanka Peryascha Veena Panava Gomukaha Dundhuryanaka Gandhadya Nedur Dundabayastata Mridanga Shanka Peryascha Veena Panava Gomukha Dundhuryanaka Gandhadya Nedur Dundabayastata Mridanga. Sweet sounding drum. Shanka, conch shell. Berya, brass band. Cha, end. Veena, string band. Panava, a kind of flute. Gomukaha, another flute. Dunduri, another drum. Anaka, kettle. Ganta, bell. Adya, others. Nidhu, sounded. Dundupaya, other different types of drums. Tata, at that time. Translation. While the Lord was departing from the palace of Hastinapur, different types of drums like the mridanga, dola, nagra, dunduri, and dundupi, and flutes of different types, the Veena, Gomukha, and Peri all sounded together to show him honor. Text 16. Prasada, Shikara, Arudha, Prasada, Shikana, Shikara, Rudha, Prasada, Shikara, Rudha,
Prasada, Shikara, Rudha,
Kuru, Naryo,
Didrikshaya,
Kuru Naryo, Didrikshaya,
Kuru Naryo, Didrikshaya,
Vavrishu,
Vavrishu,
Kusumai,
Kusumai,
Krishnam,
Krishnam,
Vavrishu, Kusumai, Krishnam,
Vavrishu, Kusumai, Krishnam,
Vavrishu, Kusumai, Krishnam,
Vavrishu, Kusumai, Krishnam,
Prema,
Prema,
Rida,
Smitekshana,
Prema, Vrida, Smitekshana, Prasada Shikana Shikara Ruda
Prasada Shikara Ruda
Kuru Naryo Dhrikshaya
Kuru Naryo Dhrikshaya
Vivrishu Kusumai Krishnam
Vivrishu Kusumai Krishnam
Vavrishu Kusumai Krishnam
Vavrishu Kusumai Krishnam
Prima Vridas Smite Samikshana
Prima Vrida Smitekshana
Prema Vrida Smitekshana
Prema Vrida Smitekshana
Prasada Shikara Ruda
Prasada Shikara Ruda
Kuru Naryo Dhrikshaya
Kuru Naryo Dhrikshaya
Vavrishu Kusumai Krishnan
Vavrishu Kusumai Krishnan
Prema Vrida Smitekshana Prasada Shikara Ruda
Prasada Shikara Ruda
Kuru Naryo Dhrikshaya
Kuru Naryo Dhrikshaya
Vavrishu Kusumai Krishnam
Vavrishu Kusumai Krishnam
Prema Vridha Smitekshana
Prema Vridha Smitekshana
Prasada Shikara Ruda
Prasada Shikara Ruda
Guru Naryo Dhrikshaya Vavrishu Kusumai Krishnam Dasmitekshana Prasada Shikara Ruda Guru Naryo Dhrikshaya Vavrishu Kusumai Krishnam Prema Vrida Smitekshana Prasada Palace Shikara The roof Arudha, ascending. Kurunarya, the ladies of the Kuru royalty. Didrikshaya, seeing. Vavrishu, showered. Kusumai, by flowers. Krishnam, upon Lord Krishna. Prema, out of affection and love. Vrida smita ikshana. Glancing with shy smiles. Translation. Out of a loving desire to see the Lord, the royal ladies of the Kurus got up on top of the palace, and smiling with affection and shyness, they showered flowers upon the Lord. Please repeat. Out of a loving desire to see the Lord, the royal ladies of the Kurus got up on top of the palace, and smiling with affection and shyness, they showered flowers upon the Lord. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Shyness is a particular extra natural beauty of the fair sex, and it commands respect from the opposite sex. This custom was observed even during the days of the Mahabharata, that is, more than 5,000 years ago. It is only the less intelligent persons not well versed in the history of the world who say that observance of separation of female from male is an introduction of the Muhammadan period in India. This incident from the Mahabharata period proves definitely that the ladies of the palace observe strict parda, restricted association with men, and instead of coming down in the open air where Lord Krishna and the others were coming down, were assembled, the ladies of the palace went up on the top of the palace and from there paid their respects to Lord Krishna by showers of flowers. It is definitely stated here that the ladies were smiling there on the top of the palace, checked by shyness. This shyness is a gift of nature to the fair sex, and it enhances their beauty and prestige, even if they are of a less important family or even if they are less attractive. We have practical experience of this fact. A sweeper woman commanded the respect of many respectable gentlemen simply by manifesting a lady's shyness. Half-naked ladies in the street do not command any respect, but a shy sweeper's wife commands respect from all. Human civilization, as conceived of by the sages of India, is to help one free himself from the clutches of illusion. The material beauty of a woman is an illusion because actually the body is made of earth, water, fire, air, etc. But because there is the association of the living spark with matter, it appears to be beautiful. No one is attracted by an earthen doll, even if it is most perfectly prepared to attract the attention of others. The dead body has no beauty because no one will accept the dead body of a so-called beautiful woman. Therefore, the conclusion is that the spirit spark is beautiful, and because of the soul's beauty, one is attracted by the beauty of the outward body. The Vedic wisdom, therefore, forbids us to be attracted by false beauty. But because we are now in the darkness of ignorance, the Vedic civilization allows very restricted mixing of women and man, of woman and man. They say that the woman is considered to be the fire, and the man is considered to be butter. The butter must melt in association with fire, and therefore they may be brought together only when it is necessary. And shyness is a check to the unrestricted mixing. It is nature's gift, and it must be utilized. We'll sing the Mangalacharna prayers, which are you'll find in your white songbook, Songs of the Vaishnavacharyas. Begin on page 10. Vande ham Sri Guru Sri Uta Parakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamska Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Sadvadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Mitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschatyadesha Tarine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Tinamine Sri Barshaba Navidevi Daitaya Kripadaye Krishna Sambandha Vigyana Dayane Prabhave Namaha Madhuryo Jvala Premadya Sri Rupanuga Bhaktida Sri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namostute Namaste Gauravani Sri Murtaye Dinatarine Rupanuga Virudhapa Siddhanta Dvanta Harine Namo Gora Kishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye Vipralambara Sambode Padambujayate Namaha Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Sakchidananda Namine Gora Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate Gaura Virbaba Bomestam Nirdesa Sajanabriya Vaishnava Sarva Boma Sri Jagannathaya Te Namaha Pancha Kalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Havanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha
Namo
Mahabharanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gora Tvishe Namaha Panchatadvatmakam Krishnam Bhakta Rupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Jayatam Surato Pangor Mama Manda Materkati Matsarva Swapadambojo Radha Manana Mohano Divya Vrindaranya Kalpa Durmada Srimad Ratnakara Singhasanasto Srimad Radha Shila Govinda Devo Prishtali Bhi Seva Manusmarami Srimad Rasarasaram Bhi Vamshi Vata Tatastita Karshan Venu Swanir Gopir Gopi Nata Sriye Sunaha Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavanishwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vrindai Tulsi Devai Priyai Keshavasya Cha Vishnu Bhakti Pradi Devi Satyavatai Namo Namaha Sri Nishinga Jai Nishinga Jai Jai Nanashinga Pralada Desha Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Vringa Matsamo Nasti Papatma Naparari Chakashchana Parihare Pilajame Kimbruve Purushottama Yuvatinam Yata Yuni Yunam Cha Yuvatal Yata Mano Birmate Tadvan Mano Me Ramatam Twayi Umau skalita bhadanam bhumireva valambanam trayijata pararanam dhvameva sharanam prabho Govinda balabe radhe prate tvamaham sada twadiyam iti janatu govindo ham dvayasaha Radhe vrindavanadishe kanunamrita vahani kripaya nijapadabja Dasyam mayam pratiyatam Vande nanda vrajastrinam Pararenum abhikshnasa Yasham hadi katot gitam Punati bhuvanatrayam Namastrestam manamapi shachiputram matrasarupam Rupam tasya gajam maruparim maturim goshtavatim Radha kundam girivanamoho radhika madhavasham Prapto yasya pratita kripaya shri gurum dhannatosmi aradana sridam danter idam jache puna puna sriman rupa padam boja rajoham syam bhave bhave hantaya madhurya bala haridasya vayo yadrama krishna chanana sparasha pramoda manam tanoti sahago ghano yostayo yat Paniya suya vasa kanna na kanna mulai. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Prasada Shikanaruda Kuru Naryo Dhrikshaya Vavrishu Kusumai Krishnam Prema Vridha Smitekshana. Out of a loving desire to see the Lord, the royal ladies of the Kurus got up on top of the palace, and smiling with affection and shyness, they showered flowers upon the Lord. So, one important point to begin with is that the whole Vedic system, the Varnashram system, is to disentangle oneself from the main attraction in the material world, which is the attraction between male and female. This is brought out very clearly and plainly by Lord Kapiladev, who says, Pumsa striya maituni bhavamitam tayomutu hridaya grantamahu atogriya kshetra sutattaviter janasya moho yamahamameti. He gives... Huh?
Is that Kapiladev?
Rishabdev, sorry. He says that the essence of material life is the attraction between male and female. And we know from our recent study of Sri Brahma Samhita, how recent? Only an hour and a half ago. Our recent study of Sri Brahma Samhita an hour and a half ago, where we reviewed this idea that the Linga Yonyatmika Jata Ima Maheshvare Praja. There's a description of the creation of the universe, and in it, it describes the process in which Lord Shiva, Parvati are joined together, and then all the offspring in this material world. It says, Linga Yonyatmika Jata, the Linga and the Yoni, the female and the male generative organs, they're actually all pervading everywhere in this world. Everywhere you look, even in inanimate objects, as in some cultures they have this idea of yin and yang, and you know there's female notes and there's male notes, there's female chords and there's male chords, major, minor. These are going on everywhere. There's this counterbalance in the material world, and there's male female. Pumsa striya means male female, and on the material side, this is what keeps everything going, despite the fact. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Mamu Petya Punarjanma Dukalaya Mashashvatam, the material world's like a big pot full of misery. And you just get thrown in that pot. And all it is misery all the time. But it's tolerable because of the apparent happiness one will get from sex. This is Pumsa Striya Maituni Pavamitam, that there's this combination between male and female. And licit or illicit sex, it's all problematic. Because once male and female come together, then there's all kinds of obligations, as Rishabhadeva says, that ato griya kshetra sutata vitar. The male and female come together, they join together in sex, and then the offspring comes, and then you have to have a place to, a nest, basically. You have to have a little field of land, and you have to have something to produce, and then you have to work hard to produce it. And then one thinks in terms of, these are my offspring. These are my children, this is my house, this is my land, and so on and so forth. So he says, janasya moho yamaham mameti. Moho means this kind of ignorance that we fall under, where we identify strongly with the material body. And this is what binds up the material world. So the project of Varnashram from the very beginning is to restrict the association between male and female, to regulate it, so it's not unrestricted, so one doesn't simply become pummeled by the material nature. One has a fighting chance to regulate oneself and to cultivate spiritual life without being over-implicated in the material life. So in the beginning of Varnashram, there's the practice of brahmacharya. For the boys, they practice strict celibacy up to at least till they're 25 years old, and then there's a choice to continue in that way or to take up the grihastha ashram. So there's two kinds of ashrams. There's the grihastha ashram and the grihamedi ashram. And the grihastha ashram means that there's family life, but it's centered around pleasing Krishna. And the grihamedi ashram is that one enters into family life, but it's based around pleasing one's own senses. And this is called the deep, dark well of material life. In grihastha ashram, one can actually be a sannyasi, as Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, one who lives in that ashram but who does everything for Krishna, raises children for Krishna, works for Krishna, yat koroshi yat ashnashi yat johosi dadasi yat, yat tapasyasi kuntiyat tat kurushva manarpanam, gives everything as a sacrifice to Krishna. Such a person barely touches the material energy and goes through unscathed. Then there's the vanaprastha ashram, which means after some years of having this family life, then one should begin to detach oneself, start to get down to fighting weight, get rid of your unneeded possessions. One can perform austerities, begin to see the world as a place that's meant just for serving Krishna and not so many obligations for the material body. And then for the man, there's sannyas, which means leaving home for good and only depending on Krishna wherever he goes, seeing that Krishna is providing. And for the woman, there's strict dedication in the last parts of life just to hearing and chanting, doing service, and so on. These ashrams are meant to cultivate this detachment from the material world. And the essence of that attachment is the attraction between male and female. So knowing that and is a very important thing. In Western culture, so-called Western culture, there's not an awareness of the fact of the binding force between male and female. In fact, it's promoted everywhere you look. In fact, in Kali Yuga nowadays, that's being promoted everywhere, all over the world, even in India. But the culture, which Prabhupada has mentioned here, of shyness on the part of the woman and not freely intermixing between men and women, is actually a civilized culture. And it allows one to experience the subtleties of a spiritual life. And also, as Prabhupada mentions, this incident that actually happened to him. He was having a meeting, a business meeting, with some other colleagues. And a sweeper woman came, and she, out of shyness, would not enter the room. It was her time to sweep out the room, but she stayed outside. They knew she was there, or, you know, she stood at the door, but she wouldn't come in. And all this big business meeting going on, they were all talking about something important, and then they all realized that she was out there. And because she didn't just barge in, but she actually stayed outside, and was very subtly, that message came across, and they all the men in the room, they stood up and they went out and let her come in and do her job sweeping the room. There's a story in the Chaitanya Bhagavat about when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was showing that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he was sitting upon the throne at Srivas Thakur's house, and devotees were coming from all over Navadvip and offering him grand offerings. One of the things, there was an abhishek going on, which required many, many pots of water. There was a servant woman who worked in the house of Srivas Thakur, whose name was Duki. And she was very shy and diligent in her service. And there was a crowded room of devotees eager to serve the Lord in different ways. And Duki was staying out of sight in the back, and what she was doing was bringing pots of Ganga water to be used in the abhishek for the Lord. So very carefully she would bring in the Ganga jal, and staying at the back of the room, she would line up the pots, and in a very neat row, doing her servant service, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu noticed her out of all the devotees because of her meekness, about her shyness and her expertise in lining up these pots, even though she was staying way, way back. And he stopped everything and said, "Who is this servitor who's bringing these pots of Ganga water?" And Srivas Thakur said, "Oh, that's one of our house servants. Her name is Duki." And Mahaprabhu said, "From now on, her name will be Suki." Changed her name. And exalted her for her quality of shyness and her expertise in her service and such. So it's not that just being overt or blatant about things is the only way to become noticed. But if one is actually, and this ties in what we were talking about before with humility, if one is humble and one is diligent in one's service, the Lord notices that, and we become promoted in our service. We don't always have to put ourselves forward in a very obvious way, but if we're diligent and we're humble, then Krishna will notice us. And this leads to a very harmonious working in society. So the other obvious points that Prabhupada gives about not mistaking the happiness in the material world for real happiness, and the attraction of the material body to be the real substance. He gives this example, which is very easy to understand, that, for instance, a woman's beauty in this world is very much sought after. So sometimes in the in Bollywood or in Hollywood, if there's a very attractive woman, then you know, she becomes famous, and her picture's everywhere, and you know, people talk about her, and you'll notice in the newspaper they have articles about, you know, these famous people, and the, you know, the beautiful people are talked about. But and such a woman is much sought after, but if the soul leaves the body of that woman, then how long will she be attractive? Such a simple equation, but whoever thinks about it, right? Everyone's thinking, oh, this is an attractive person. But then if the soul is gone, how long is the body, is the body of that person actually attractive? Approximately how long? Zero? As soon as the soul's gone from the body, then it's ever, burn it, get it out of here. Who wants to go in a room? We have a movie star in the other room. She wants to meet you. Or you can go in and meet her. She's not there to meet you anymore, but you can go in and you can have, so say you take her picture. You know, if you go in and take the picture of the dead movie star, you'll be considered some kind of a a crazy person, some kind of a macabre situation where you're taking pictures of a dead person. The status immediately changes. The soul's gone. There's no more attraction there. And if we apply this principle everywhere, we see that the attraction between male and female and the attractive external features of the body are actually illusory. I saw once a science film, and it showed this very attractive couple, man and a woman, getting ready to go on a date. And they were preening themselves in the mirror. You know, the man was combing his hair, the woman was putting on makeup and everything. And so the camera would be there and then would say, oh, isn't she beautiful? Look at this beautiful hair. She's combing her hair. And then the camera would go closer and closer and closer towards the hair. And then they had a microscopic view of what's in the hair. And there's these little bugs that live in the follicles of the hair. They kind of stick their heads out like crabs in the sand, and they're going like, what are you doing? You know? And they go, there's the hair follicle, you know? How beautiful is it now? And then with the skin also, you know, the man had really nice skin, and they're saying, see how he, you know, he puts skin bracer on his skin and everything. And then they go closer and closer. Let's take a closer look. And when you really look at skin really closely, you think, you know, it looks like pockmarks or something. It looks like some kind of, you know, a foreign landscape. You know, nothing that you could really, really relate to that's attractive. But due to the illusory nature, this representation, this reflected idea that, you know, this body is beautiful, there's some kind of an attraction, but it's temporary. But we can understand through knowledge that it's not, actually. It's not something desirable. When I was a kid, there was a cartoon on, probably, I doubt if you've heard of it in India, but it was called Bugs Bunny. You ever heard of Bugs Bunny? Anybody? You have? You have? Okay. Well, Bugs Bunny was this character, and he was a rabbit. And he had this, what do you call him? Elmer Fudd. It was always that. Elmer Fudd was this guy who, he was kind of like a hunter. And he was always, whenever they were at odds with each other, Bugs Bunny was a rascal, and he'd always be running around causing kind of trouble and things like that. He was a very curious kind of character. And Elmer Fudd would chase after him sometimes with a shotgun, trying to kill him, and because he was thinking, I'll shoot him and I'll eat him. Or this is American culture, you know. Anyway, I'm getting to a point that'll bring out something from this, but when Bugs Bunny was getting away from this Elmer Fudd character, sometimes what he'd do, he'd like go in a hole or behind a tree, and then he'd come out the other side, and his eyelashes, he put on these like eyelashes, long eyelashes, and maybe a little lipstick. Same Bugs Bunny, same bunny, same character, but eyelashes and lipstick. And as soon as that happened, then Elmer Fudd, he stopped and he looked. And then there were these, in the cartoon, there was hearts going around the head of Elmer Fudd, like, he was attracted, you know. And when I was a kid, I was looking at it, I was going, that's crazy. It's still the same rabbit, you know. But later on, when I started, you know, studying Bhagavad Gita and everything, thinking about how, you know, what's the difference? You know, male body, female body, it's like put on some eyelashes, a little lipstick, and it's like, and then, oh, you know, there's some change, you know. Just like Elmer Fudd, he's thinking, oh, what happened to Bugs Bunny? He goes, he's right there. He just has lashes on and some lipstick. This is the trick of the material nature, thinking that there's some, you know, there's some attractive feature there between the male and the female. Prabhupada told a story about a man who gets on a train, and he's traveling along on the train, and it starts to get more and more crowded. And then this very beautiful woman gets on the train, and the man's mind becomes attracted to her. So standing there, and just as she gets on the train, you know, more and more people push on, and they go into a tunnel, and somehow the lights go off in the train, so it's completely dark. And then, you know, the people are pushing closer, and he's imagining, because of the proximity of the woman who came on the train, that my hand is on the rail, and her hand is, like, kind of touching where mine is, and I'm right next to her. And so going through the tunnel in the dark, and he's thinking that, imagining in his mind that, well, you know, she might like me, actually. And maybe, you know, we'll hit it off. And, you know, we might get married. And then he's imagining we'll have kids. And, you know, I can work really hard and I'll get a nice house. And, you know, I'll be able to show all my family, this beautiful woman, and this nice house that I have. And again, he's become very happy, you know, that this is all happening to him in his mind, that this is going on, and this is the woman of his dreams, and somehow it all happened here on the train, and they've come together. And then just then, you know, as the train bursts out from the other end of the tunnel, and the daylight comes in, and everything's illuminated. And then he looks over where he feels some touching by his hand, and it's this ugly old man, kind of a homeless guy, and he jumps, he recoils immediately. Jumps away, and oh, he's immediately repulsed, you know, from his hand was, how could I be touching that man? The woman's at the other end of the train somewhere. But this is the force of the material consciousness. This is what material life means, the attractive force that goes on here, thinking this is a nice house, this is a nice town, this is a beautiful man, this is a beautiful woman, this is an unattractive man, this is an unattractive woman. It's being concocted within the mind, actually. And this is by that force, illusory force, I'm being dragged from one species of life to another to try to enjoy in material life. So the project of the intelligent person is to disinvest him or herself of this illusory idea that there's some kind of attraction within the material world. And but to not just to reject it. This is what the Gyanis do. They'll say, this is illusory, therefore I won't run after it. But where do they have to go after that? They have some impersonal conception of God. Therefore, they don't have any real beauty to be attracted to. But the intelligent person will then understand that if there is a reflected beauty in this world, there's a source for that beauty. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate. Iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. Krishna is the source. And if things in this world appear so beautiful, they can attract me so much, how much attractive must be the real source of all of those things? Akilam atmanam jagat. Shukadeva Goswami says in the Srimad Bhagavatam that Krishna is the soul of all other souls. If we're talking about how the body's not attractive because when the soul leaves the body's no longer attractive, that it's actually the soul that's attractive, how attractive is that soul? So how much more attractive is the soul of our soul, is the very source of our soul? So this is the idea. So turning one's attention towards Krishna and understanding how attractive he is and becoming captivated by his beauty. This is the essence of spiritual life and of successfully detaching oneself from the bodily conception of life, which is the bane of all conditioned souls that keep us keep me attached here in this material world without any profit, life after life. Om Tat Sat, Hare Krishna. Any questions or points? Any practical experience of this? Any of these things? Anybody want their money back? Rakshit?
Yes, on the line.
We have a mic.
I hope it's not an academic question, but on the last point that you mentioned about beautiful people, and the fact that they are beautiful is because they are reflecting the beauty of Krishna. So could one say then that the beautiful person also may have a beautiful soul, in that even though Bhagavad Gita says that a learned person looks upon all living entities the same, whether it's a cow, a brahmana, whatever, because there is the soul in everyone. Could there be differences in degrees of either the advancement of the soul or the attractiveness of the soul that's being reflected in the body, because they may be spiritually enlightened?
Well, there's an art of physiognomy through which one can observe somebody and have some idea about their past and about their mentality, about their station in life, so-called. So that could apply, you know, to some degree. In other words, in the Nectar of Devotion, for instance, Rupa Goswami mentions that if one has very ugly physical body, this is an indication of past bad karma, sinful activity, or if one has legal implications. Also, these things, you know, you're born into, you know, heavy legal implications, or you're very physically ugly. On the material side, this is from some past bad karma. But as Prabhupada mentions here, whatever situation one's external body is in, if one has spiritual qualities, then one becomes beautiful. And vice versa. If one has a very beautiful external body, but doesn't have spiritual qualities, then one's not attractive. Somebody, they're very ugly, actually. Undesirable.
Kunti Devi is praying Janmashvaya Shuta Shribir, so one may think that these things are actually a blessing, but we see that those who are graced by these four things, they have a very hard time surrendering to Krishna, because they think, hey, I've got everything going for me, let's enjoy and let's live it up a bit. So actually, what appears to be a blessing is actually a curse. And now, like we see, the so-called recession, economic crisis, political crisis, but people are much more open towards spiritual life and towards something different. So what appears to be as a curse is actually perceived as a blessing for a devotee. So you see how everything is opposite.
Thank you. Vipul.
This is from Prabhupada Lilamrita. And Prabhupada, he wanted to marry. So his father took him to his wife's place. So I mean, in the girl's place. And he saw the woman. And then he saw her sister also. Then after seeing, you know, he said to his father that I like the sister very much. So then his father gave a very nice instruction, which Prabhupada told everyone, that he said that the other sister is beautiful, that is right, but But you know, in spiritual life, she'll become an obstacle for you, because you'll be attracted to her beauty, and you know, you'll then forget, you'll then go away from the beauty of Krishna. So that's what Prabhuji also pointed from Kunti prayers, that one who is after, you know, one who's after the beauty, after wealth, it becomes very difficult for to surrender to the Supreme Lord. So I felt, yeah, this incident.
Very strong point. As a matter of fact, it's known even in popular culture, because when I was young, there was a song that was on the radio. Kurt's not smiling because he probably knows it. If you want to be happy for the rest of your life, just try to make an ugly girl your wife. It was by the Jive Five. Well, leave it to Akurnath to remember who sang it. I had no idea who sang it. Haribo. So this is this is also known to be an entangling force. Even in popular culture, it's known. Akurnath Prabhu?
So nowadays, the idea is very prominent that in cultures that separate the men from women, then the women are at a disadvantage. Like they had in the American culture, they had segregation of blacks from whites in the South, and it was said that, well, we were separate but equal. But then the U.S. Supreme Court decided that separate is inherently unequal, that the blacks would inherently be, by the separation, by the very separation, they were being put in a lower category as a second-class citizen without the opportunities for advancement and so forth as the majority population. And the idea is there that, for example, in Iran, there's a theocracy, and they're very, very strict about this purdah separation and so forth, and so many of the women complain about it or feel oppressed that they can't wear what they want to wear, or they're mistreated. So how do we deal with that? That if we're promoting a society which separates men from women, then general public or the mass of modern public will consider us to be cruel and oppressive and unequal, backward, you know, unforward thinking, unenlightened or non-progressive or something like that. So how do we deal with that that perception and that criticism?
Mata, do you want to answer?
No, I just want to add to what Prabhuji said. Maybe it's relevant to what Prabhuji was asking. You told about how that lady was standing outside when she had to go in and clean. So, but today, as Prabhuji said, like women trying to compete with men, and even in many of the performance reviews, they say that you should be more aggressive, and shyness is like kind of promoted as a negative quality. So how does this verse actually apply to a modern woman? Can you please explain?
Well, modern means different things in different cultures and circumstances as well, and the essence of what you're asking, the answer is in an application of any kind of rule, which is meant for the benefit of those who the rules being legislated for, is the motive behind it and the way that it's legislated. Practically, motive is everything, and the feeling behind how it's being administered makes a big difference. If those who are administering a rule are doing it out of some kind of way of artificial domination, that will be felt. And if it's being done out of a sense of protection for everybody involved, then that I would argue that feeling would be pervasive. In other words, those involved would feel that and feel a harmonious situation. Now, as far as, you know, its application in the modern sense, even Prabhupada applied it differently according to the culture, because when he came to America, you know, he noted that there's a different culture here. And he didn't try to force that very strict culture that he came from on the Western culture as soon as he got here, because he noted that it's already a natural thing that men and women freely mix in the workplace and everywhere else. And therefore, he adjusted it according to time, place, and circumstances for Krishna consciousness, so that devotees involved would not artificially be restricted, feel restricted. So it requires, you know, a little bit of foresight and not just enforcing a rule for the sake of enforcing it, and it also requires studying the motive why you're doing it. If you start with the idea of why we're doing these things, you know, for helping everyone become more Krishna conscious, if that's our motive and that's the reason for doing it, then the way to adjust it and the way that we enforce the rules will become beneficial. And so it requires self-realization. It requires understanding why we're doing these things. In some cultures that you mentioned, it becomes just the law of the land. It becomes a fanatical kind of an enforcement. And rules are really meant for uplifting people, not for oppressing them artificially. So, you know, we can see exactly what's necessary according to how to foster the Krishna consciousness, the spiritual consciousness of the people involved, and then we have to apply it. And, you know, when we're aware of this culture, for instance, you're mentioning that you're in the workforce, and then, you know, we're aware of this culture of, you know, not free mixing and everything like that, but then it's encouraged. In fact, on your performance report, you know, if you were just shy and stayed at the back all the time, say, well, she's not very motivated or something like that, didn't do a very good job, and then you wouldn't be able to, you know, to have a job, something like that. When we go out and we're mixing with the rest of society for preaching purposes too, we'll be in all kinds of circumstances where people aren't familiar with our culture or our orientation. For instance, I just had this conversation the other night with Keshava Bharti Maharaj when I was in Toronto. There was this woman who was driving along the street, and when she saw us out selling books, she immediately stopped her car, found a parking place, came over. She wanted to buy some. She wanted to know all about it. She was very interested. And I talked to her for some time. We gave her books and everything. And then she came to the temple the next day. And she was so excited about Krishna consciousness, happy meeting the devotees. And, you know, I was in the temple room with all the devotees, and deities are there, everything. And she came up and gave me a big hug, you know, right in the middle of the temple room. And but it was like out of, like, she was so happy, you know, to see me again and all this kind of stuff. And it was out of, you know, I was surprised, you know, she just grabbed me. And, you know, all the devotees were there. And so I was talking to different devotees about it later, because this situation comes up a lot, actually. In Western culture, you know, to show your affection or appreciation or something like that, you can give somebody a hug, you know. And, like, if I had jumped back, you know, and said, no, no, don't touch me or something like that, this is not appropriate, she would have, you know, been startled. I've seen it before. You know, someone jumped, no, no, don't, you know. Like, what happened, you know? And it could really turn somebody off, actually, you know, that they think, what kind of place is this, you know? Even Maharaj, you know, was saying, you know, that happens to him sometimes too, you know, just out of the blue, something, and all of a sudden, you know, what? And I said, well, what do you do? It's like, well, what can you do? Said, for, you know, in subsequent dealings, you know, if he sees it coming, he goes like this really quick. Oh, yeah, like that. Sort of for the block, you know. But it's a subtle thing. we have to, you know, see what was the motive behind, you know, why she gave me a hug. Probably down the line, she'll understand as she becomes more integrated, you know, with the culture and everything like that, how it all works and everything. That's not that, you know, how men and women express their appreciation. But in the beginning, you know, there's some concession. We're not just hard line, like, get away from me, you know, don't touch me, we can't do that. And that takes place, you know, when you're preaching, when you're out in the world. And then it also takes place in the modern world, in the workplace. As you're a devotee and you're going in the workplace, you have to be mature and learn how to balance and keep that sort of shyness or chastity in your heart all the time. You're protecting your heart. There's the story in the Hitopadesha about the, you know, the story about the monkey. And he was in a tree, and below him there was a river. And in the river lived an alligator who used to swim by the tree every day and look up at the monkey and think, whoa, looks like a good lunch. But then somehow they struck up a conversation because there were apples in the tree, and the monkey would throw apples to him and he'd eat those apples, and they became friends and they talked back and forth. And after a while, the alligator gave up his idea of eating the monkey and thought, you know, he's just a nice guy. I really like him, even though alligators eat monkeys, you know. It's like, I wouldn't eat him. He's my friend. And then one day the alligator went home and is talking to his wife. And he was saying, you know, I have this new friend. It's kind of unusual, though, because it's a monkey. And she's saying, you have a monkey friend? Let's eat him. And he said, no, I can't eat him. He's my friend. But the wife was so relentless, saying, no, no, that's monkey. You got to, let's, you know, bring him home and I'll eat him. And finally he gave in. He said, all right, I'll go get him. And, you know, I'll bring him back to our house and then you can eat him. So he went back and he told the monkey, he said, why don't you come visit my family? And the monkey said, well, I don't know if that's a good idea. He said, no, no, really, we're friends, it's okay. Come on down. So finally the monkey was convinced, so he jumped down and he got on the alligator's back. And the alligator started swimming out into the water. And he felt a little guilty, so he said, you know, I got to tell you, my wife really wants to eat you when you come home, and what can I do? I gave in to her, but, you know, that's the scenario. And the monkey was more intelligent than the alligator. The crocodile?
Eat your heart.
Oh, yeah. She wants to eat your heart. So he said, I wish you had told me before I jumped from the tree that she wanted to eat my heart. Because she had expressed that that's the best part of the monkey, and I'll, you know, eat his heart first. So he said, the alligator said, what do you mean? He said, I didn't bring my heart. He said, well, where is it? He said, it's back up in the tree. He says, go back, and I'll jump up, I'll get it, and then we'll go. And he said, okay. So he goes back, and the monkey jumps as hard as he can off of the back of the alligator back into the tree. And he wouldn't come down again, obviously. And the moral of the story was that wherever you go and whomever you integrate with in the world, you can associate in all kinds of different ways, but you don't give your heart. You keep that part protected, you know, because that's... It's impossible to live in the world in a bubble and not integrate, especially the way the world is nowadays. The lines of culture, because of internationalism, have broken down so much, and there's so many expectations on both sides that it's very difficult not to integrate in different ways. But you do have to keep your heart protected and keep that very carefully. Don't open it up, you know, to just anybody. So that's how to integrate into society, you know, and live a practical life without being affected. Any other things? Yes. Yes, microphone.
this is out of the topic. The other day I was reading this Brahma Samhita. This question come out. The text 3 in the translation, it's saying the holy name, the last part of the sentence, the holy name consisting of 18 transcendental letters of manifested is a hexagonic figure with the sixfold division. And I was wondering that what is that 18 letters?
So, the Krishna mantra. Yes. This is the main mantra, the Panchatrik mantra, which is passed down through disciplic succession. And the mantra is mentioned later on in the text.
It's in the purport.
No. Is it in the purport also? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so that's 5, not 6, 18, right? Yeah,
it says letters, but it means syllables.
Yeah.
Yeah, letters.
Because they are letters in Sanskrit, each letter is a syllable.
Well, there it is. Kishore Prabhu, your parents are here? Could we welcome them?
Yeah.
Hare Krishna. Welcome.
Vema Redin, coming from India.
Thank you for coming to visit us. We've been awaiting your arrival for some time now. Nice to meet you, Krishna.
Vaiso Parvati, from Guntur district, India.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you.
How was your trip over? It was okay? And everyone's settled in, all comfortable?
Yeah. We held them off without sleeping in the afternoon, so that they were sleeping.
Adjust them for jet lag, right? Nice. Good. For 6 months? Wow, well, welcome. We're so happy you're here. Hare Krishna. So, this weekend, starting with today, today is what we call, is it the first Saturday? Today's the third Saturday. The third Saturday of the month, this is follow-up Saturday. So, it's a day when you should take time to follow up on any of the, especially people that you've met, that you're meaning to keep in touch with them. Yesterday, I sent a packet of laddus and that Veda Mantra CD that Nitai Kripa Prabhu made, and also the ISV Sankirtan CD to the couple of people that I met up in Toronto on the street. I met two people that were very interested, came to the temple. So it took a little time. I had to find a plate of package. Of course, I had to make the laddus, put them in there, and the whole thing. But then when I sent them out, I just felt so successful that now they have a personal letter and a package coming to them up in Toronto. And I had written to them asking for their mailing address and such. And it takes a little time and effort to put those things together, but it has a huge result when you take a little personal time to write people. Also, I had gone to a program at Sandhya's house a few weeks ago, and I asked her to give me the names of all the people who had attended, so she did, and I wrote postcards to all of them on the flight when I was flying from San Francisco to Chicago and then to Pittsburgh to go to New Vrindavan. Unfortunately, I left them all on the plane. I got out, and I had written all the postcards carefully, and I left them in the pocket seat ahead of me. So I wrote them again. I did it over again. And then I sent them all out. And I've been getting, messages back from people, just a few lines, mentioning how nice it was to meet them and such. But the result is huge. Even she has this acupuncturist that doesn't know anything about Krishna consciousness. It was her first time to any kind of program, but she invited her to come over. She's Chinese. She's from really from China. And also a Christian. But she was so overwhelmed the fact that I sent her a postcard that she called me on the... She insisted she wanted my cell phone number. She called me on the phone. She was just overflowing with appreciation for getting a personal note back. And it takes time to do this, but the returns are enormous. So this is the way to follow up. Even if you can't follow with every single person that you meet, figure out the ones that are the most important first. You can do that. You can, you know, label them and say the most likely to succeed and or reciprocate, and then send out something to them personal. It's really nice to write a postcard if you can, because in your personal hand, it also makes a difference. Or send them some prasadam also. I was thinking what to put in the package to send to these two new bhaktas, a bhakta and a bhaktin, up in Toronto, who we had just met on the street, and now they're chanting a couple rounds. And so I asked Navina, this is Navina Nirada here, I said, you know, what should I put in the packet? And he said, don't put too much. He said, you don't want to overwhelm people in the beginning. So I resisted putting everything I could possibly stuff in there and put just a couple of things, like some prasadam and a little CD. You know, start with some simple things. And we have no idea how meaningful that is to people. So on follow-up Saturday, it's a time to take stock of, you know, who are the people you've met, or who are the people you're thinking of sending something to or taking care of in Krishna consciousness, and take the time to do it, or at least write it down so that you can plan to do it in the next, you know, few days or week or whenever you have time. But start the process. And it's very rewarding to do this, to reciprocate with people, to give them an opportunity. And also on follow-up Saturday, we think of different projects that we're in the middle of that we may have started and not completed, and gather them together, look at them carefully, give them some attention, and think how to move them forward. Like one thing I'm thinking of right now is that we have all 50 madungas now, and we had Dharmesh and I had talked a couple of months ago about starting regular, you know, classes for devotees. We also have a plan to bring Badahari Prabhu back. This is just an example of something that's sort of a plan that's just starting to move out of the barn, really. And collect up those things that you're working on, put them down, look at them, turn them around and look at them carefully and see how you can move them forward. This is the purpose of a follow-up Saturday. The other thing that's of significance today is that it's the last weekend in our Bhaktivinoda monthly Sankirtan festival. And that means we have this last weekend. For those who haven't participated in book distribution, you still have an opportunity to be counted amongst those devotees who are contributing to the result that we're going to offer to Bhaktivinoda Thakur on Monday at the festival. And we also have Navina Nirada here too. For anybody who's interested in learning more about book distribution from someone who's been doing it for a very, very long time and who's really good at it, you can talk to come out with Navina today or tomorrow. He'll go anywhere in the Bay Area and work with anybody who would like to watch and see his technique of how he distributes books to great benefit. Always good to watch different devotees and see how they do it. And Navina is one of the experts. So those are a couple things. Any last announcements or points? Anything? Okay, then, we'll have the Guru Puja. So let's put all the books away as efficiently, as quickly as possible. Then we'll worship our founder, Acharya Srila Prabhupada, and then we will have prasadam. Oh, and I wanted to mention also that, are you going to do the Guru Puja today? Who is doing the Guru Puja today? Okay, well, here's what I was going to mention, and that is that Narahari Prabhu and Gyanadipti are gone. He was the one doing the Guru Puja on a regular basis. But I'd like to propose is have a sign-up list. Everyone who the other night, a few weeks ago, last month, whenever it was, learned how to do Artik, we put everyone could sign up on a sheet, and we'll rotate each week. Everyone should practice doing the artik for Srila Prabhupada. So if we could start a sign-up sheet this morning, and everyone who has learned how to do the artik, then you can sign up for one of the weekends for on a Saturday to do the Guru Puja. Is that okay? Okay. Do we have like a sheet of paper or something like that? We can. Praveena jumps up. Okay. All right, so Praveena will start a list for doing the Guru Puja, and then those of you who have learned how to do it from that class, then please sign up on the sheet, and we'll put you down for a particular weekend upcoming. Is that good? Do you want to do it today? Okay. Huh? You're all right. Okay, so Gandharvika Mataji will start today, start the process of doing the Guru Puja for Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol.